Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Captain Storm number 17. Cover date January 1967, cover price 12 cents. Cover artist Irv Novik. Edited by Robert Kaniger, featuring First Shot for a Dead Man, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Irv Novik, and Our Fighting Forces number 105, cover date January 1967, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Joe Kubert, edited by Robert Kaniger, featuring Blood Loyalty, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Jack Abel. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go.
Fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away. And now it's so much fun. What?
Captain Hunter doesn't find his brother, but he does find Lou Linz. Plus, Captain Storm, necromancer? Confused? Don't worry, I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
When you walked down that road, heavy burden, heavy load, I will rise and I will walk with you.
Baby, I'll walk with you.
Why are we singing this?
Because Captain Storm and...
Oh.
And Captain Hunter, they're walking, man. They're walking the walk. They're fighting the good fight.
Is Della Reese involved? Because that's the theme song from Touched by an Angel, which, as you know, I watched every episode of with my parents.
Yes, well, I was thinking of the themes of this story, the conflict, yeah. The ghostly sort
yes,
of angelic
lots
kind
of supernatural
intervention.
Content.
Yes.
That's better than what I was going to sing.
All right, good.
When Irish eyes are smiling, all the world will smile with you, especially us, because we're going to Ireland
in three days.
Yes, surprise.
I'm so excited.
We're going to Ireland for three days.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. Totally. We arrive on Friday. We leave on Monday.
That's right.
Yep.
Why not? We're young. You only live once. Actually, I'm just kidding.
We're not young.
Dr. Husband bought a guitar from a luthier.
Michael O'Leary, outside of Dublin.
Equivalent value would be a 5.5 grade of Detective Comics number 58, just for our listeners' reference.
Pretty valuable.
Very valuable. Mm-hmm. Too valuable to ship. We had to go pick it up in person and buy it a seat on the plane on the way back.
Mr. Guitar Tutor.
Yes. I'm surprised you didn't make it a lady.
Well, I believe that all guitars are feminine.
They're shaped like a woman, aren't they?
They are shaped like a woman's body, and they make beautiful music, and so they should be... I regard guitars as feminine. Okay. I always give my guitars feminine names.
What's this one named? Have you named it yet?
Not yet. I'm not.
Oh, gee.
I'll think of a beautiful Irish named. Like
okay.
Moira or something like that, a Maeve or... Or...
Yes.
A Sumpta.
Siobhan,
yeah.
So if we have any listeners in or around Dublin, let me know on social media. We'll have tea or something.
I'd love to. Yeah.
I'm kidding. We're not going to drink anything non-alcoholic.
Will you have this out in time?
Yes, girl.
Okay.
I'll turn it around. You know me.
All right. No editing.
No. Why start now?
Right.
Captain Storm is about to make an impossible promise in First Shot for a Dead Man. This is Captain Storm number 17. He's only got one more issue before his magazine's canceled.
No.
I tell you, yes.
No.
And then he's going to lose an eye along, and then he's got no leg and no eye, and then he joins the losers.
Oh, no. Yeah. I love Captain Storm.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
He's a peg-legged PT boat skipper. All they have in the cover is PT boat skipper, but we know he's also got a peg leg.
Stop calling him peg-legged.
Well, it's literally a peg.
Yeah, I know, but come on, man.
It sticks into his shoe. Usually, and it didn't break off in this story. Usually it breaks off.
Sometimes it does, yeah. Yeah.
All right, ready?
Where are you on?
The splash page.
All right.
Enemy sub is surfacing right under Captain Storm's PT boat. Mm-hmm. The PT boat skipper had picked up a dead sailor floating in the water, only to find that the sailor made a strange request of him. One of the most startling tales to come out of the boiling Pacific is the eerie
first shot for a dead man. You said dead man.
Of course I did.
Of course you did.
Not to be confused with Deadman, the actual superhero.
No, never.
These adventures take place, of course, during World War II in the boiling Pacific.
Okay.
Against the enemy Japanese Navy.
During World War II.
The blazing sun beat down on our heads like sparks from a fire as a PT-47 sped on its patrol. Much like today, the blazing sun has been beating down on my head also every time I go outside.
Oh, did you walk the dogs this afternoon?
Yes, I did.
Good for you.
Except for when it poured rain. Then the...
Right, I drove home from that. I went to the doctor's today.
You did?
Yeah, just a quick visit.
And how are you?
I'm very well.
Good.
And I'll have a follow-up visit in 6 months.
Are you enjoying good health?
I am enjoying good health, good, thank you. Good, yeah, but good, I drove good, home good. In that driving rain. It was very refreshing.
Well, you didn't have the windows open, did you?
No, I mean, I meant refreshing for the land. Because we had some very pleasant weather for a while. We had a really good day of rain. Yes. Or was it a couple days of rain? Like, do you remember when we had rain a couple weeks ago?
Yes.
And then nothing. Like, it started to look dry again. I thought, oh, no, here we go. Late summer. And we're not going to have any rain. And then we got a nice soaking rain today.
Don't forget, it's still hurricane season.
Hurricane. Yes, we could probably get a nice hurricane coming through. Yes. The remnants of a hurricane.
Yes, sure.
So, in the blazing sun beat down on our heads like sparks from a fire as PT-47 sped on its patrol.
And there's a dead body floating in the water.
Yep.
So let's pick it up, fellas.
We're gonna, of course, it's a U.S. Navy on his... Well, they would pick up any dead body.
Sure, but this is a young American sailor skipper.
Yeah.
Have him brought aboard and wrapped in blankets, J.G. That means Lieutenant Junior Grade.
Junior Grade. And they said they'll put him below deck.
His eyes are wide open. Mm-hmm. Something about the dead man's face grips Captain Storm. He's got the strangest feeling that he's speaking to me.
He says, I was killed without firing a shot at the enemy. Help me make my death mean something. Help me fight back just once. And it won't be as if I've died for nothing. Help me. Help me.
Why doesn't he just look in his open pupils? Because as we know from Batman's team up with Rose and the Thorn.
You can see what the last thing was
yes,
they saw, right?
If you look in a dead man's eyes, you see the last thing they saw. That's how Batman tracks down murderers. Mm-hmm. And it's true because I read it in comics. Well, Captain Storm thinks the heat's getting to him. He's sweating profusely.
Oh, yeah, because there's a dead boy speaking to him.
Yes. Suddenly, a sinister shape is silhouetted against the horizon. It's an enemy destroyer. Prepare for torpedo attack. All hands to battle stations.
The air was filled with a tearing sound and then churning the water near us with flame.
They've sighted us. They're trying to get our range. We'll take evasive action and come in on our run.
Aye, aye, skipper.
I would think a PT boat could zip around pretty fast, right?
Yes, but they can also take some fire. And then this is, they do, look at that. This is excellent artwork.
Yes, this artwork is by Jack Abel. I think clearly trying to emulate Joe Kubert, who did the cover.
Okay.
Because I don't remember Jack Abel being this sort of loose in his strokes.
Yeah, look at the inking of the lines.
Yeah. Dr. Bob here with a brief interjection. There's a reason I don't remember Jack Abel being so loose with his strokes, because this art isn't by Jack Abel. It's by Irv Novik. I just said it in the introduction. Please ignore anything I say from this point forward. All right, now you may proceed.
So, the enemy gunners were good too. They set the water all around us boiling. I could imagine them joking. Ha! Yankee mosquito has lost its sting.
Sure. Well, Captain Storm's going to give them something else to think about. Fire one, fire two, before they put the TNT squeeze.
They launch torpedoes, or what they call them as tin cans. Tin cans. So the enemy gunners heated up the barrels in their guns, firing at the two tin fish, speeding toward them. They actually get one. They blew it out of the water. However, the other one hit, and man...
Dead on,
blows that destroyer out of the water.
And it's sinking into the deep six. The PT boat's going to get out of there in case that submarine has a buddy around here somewhere who can slice us up into small steaks.
Well, there they go. Off he goes they down go. Below. He looked in on the sailor they picked up from the sea a little later, and he says, "Sorry you couldn't have a piece of this action, but we made it out."
Once again. Yeah, go ahead. I thought I heard him speak.
"Help me. Fire a shot against the enemy, so I will not have died for nothing. If you were like me, tossed like a useless rag from your torpedoed ship, I would help you to strike a blow against the enemy. Help me." It's in squiggly lines.
Well, Captain Storm is still thinks he's crazy. Yep. Apparently he's talking to himself because JG overhears him talking.
Did what? You say anything, Skipper?
What? Who? Me? No. I didn't say anything. Gulp.
At that very moment, PT-47 lurched.
Well, this one kid thinks they're running aground. Captain Storm says, running aground in the middle of the Pacific?
No.
God, had too much sun on your skin, son. I better have you relieved.
But the next moment, it did seem as if it was running aground.
Yes, that enemy sub is surfacing right underneath. And it looks like we're going to have to fight hand to hand. That's what we're used to in these war comics. Yeah. There's lots of punching.
Punching. Kick. Punch.
All right. Captain Storm orders his men to start swinging their oars around and things because he doesn't want anyone to get to the guns.
This is what we call in board game melee or RPGs. Excuse me, RPGs. We call this melee.
Do you?
A melee round, yes. Yes, everyone is hitting everyone.
I famously never played D&D, even though I was exactly the right age and exactly the right demographic.
Is it because you didn't have any friends?
Yes, correct.
Aww.
And they didn't have a single-player version in my day.
We're certainly making up for it in our...
I should say so.
A rich bounty of friends who play role-playing games.
Yes. Now... got to keep each other from getting to our guns because they would wind up blowing each other out of the water, and nobody wants that. Suddenly, Captain Storm notices that they are closing the conning tower, means they're going to dive and then torpedo the PT boat at periscope level.
Mm-hmm.
Does that all make sense to you? Because I swear I kind of zoned out.
Yeah.
The sub dives.
And then he starts singing, "It's time to roll out the barrel.
We'll have a barrel of fun."
I guess that's a good time to sing.
Sure.
So they fired a torpedo at them.
The enemy, to be clear, fires a torpedo.
And he turns hard to starboard.
Yep.
And they avoid it. And then they drop depth charges.
Yes.
And they
destroy another sub.
Up that sub. That's two for two.
The same day, they've destroyed two enemy subs.
Right.
This little mosquito boat.
It's a very, very active day.
Uh-huh. Somehow, though, Captain Storm doesn't hear the cheers of hurrah. He hears, quote-unquote, another voice, the voice of the dead sailor.
Yeah, you do the dead voice.
Well, Captain Storm first is telling him about the great fight. We had a totally unexpected great fight. One moment it's calm, the next the Pacific is boiling over, you know?
I know nothing. I did nothing. That's why you've got to help me strike just one blow against the enemy, so I won't have died in vain. Help me. Help me. You're the only one who can, Obi-Wan.
Oh, what does this kid want? He's dead. And they've already destroyed two subs in an afternoon.
This is all happening in Captain Storm's head.
Captain Storm leaves again, muttering to himself, "It's the heat and the fighting. I'm seeing things. I'm hearing things that aren't here. It'll be all right when we get back to port. I'll be fine, except for my wooden leg." So, topside, Captain Storm orders the crew to shake this area from their heels. No telling if that sub was part of a shark pack and others will be sniffing around.
Aye, aye, Skipper.
What are the chances that they would meet another sub?
Very unlikely.
Well, first of all, the water's gone sour. How does that happen?
If for some reason their freshwater storage got somehow infiltrated with salt water.
Okay.
Or.
Yes?
I don't know. Freshwater can go sour if algae grows in it. I don't really know. But the water's gone sour. So they have to go ashore to where they know they can get a source of fresh water.
Yes, a tiny, friendly island. However, the natives are not there to greet them. What's up with that?
They're probably off to sea fishing.
So they go inland, they're refilling their water supply, when suddenly they hear weapons fire. They assume the boat is under attack. The crew races back. Captain Storm is last, of course, because his wooden leg is holding him back. But when he gets back to the beach, he sees his crew engaged in mighty fisticuffs and gunfire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the natives aren't here. They probably fled to another island to escape this force the enemy put ashore to occupy their island. And suddenly, he's attacked by a Japanese soldier with a sword.
Sword. An S-word.
All right. It's the commander of the enemy sub. Captain Storm's pistol is jammed. This other guy's got a sword. He blocks the sword with his gun.
Pistol, yeah.
He gets it knocked out of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's going to slash him in half with his sword, and suddenly Captain Storm comes up with a karate counterattack. Classic move. He uses the enemy's weight against him and flips him over on the ground. With the guns then covering the rest of the crew, they scramble back to the PT boat, make an escape, back out to sea. Back down he goes to converse with his dead sailor. You couldn't have had a place in this fight, son. It wasn't a naval brawl. It was just a free-for-all. Something that suddenly kicked up. You understand, don't you?
Dead sailor, can you understand this? And again, he imagined the accusation.
But is he imagining?
When the right time comes, you will give me the chance to fight. To strike my first blow against the enemy, won't you? You won't let my death be so cheap that I couldn't even fire one shot against the enemy? You're the only one who could help me. Help me.
Captain Storm goes back topside and vows not to go down to the hold again. So there, dead sailor. Suddenly.
That's when the air was filled with screaming lead.
It's still the same day, as far as we know.
Yeah.
They are being strafed
war.
By Japanese Zeros. Mm-hmm. Two fighters coming out of the noonday sun. They get one of the planes, but they are blasted by the other.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Storm blacks out. In fact, everyone on deck blacks out.
He calls it bomb concussion.
Yes. Captain Storm blearily looks around, sees that everyone else is blacked out from the blast. He can't lift a finger to fight off that second plane. This is the time for that dead sailor to come to the deck and fire around at this enemy plane. It's too bad he's dead and can't walk around. Dead. What? There he is.
He takes over the gun.
Takes over the gun. He's walking around, fires into the air, shoots the enemy plane down.
Mm-hmm. Does a little jig.
Yep. What do they call that? An Irish jump?
A jig?
You jump. No, you jump in the air and kick your heels together. An Irish kick heel? You know, like leprechauns do.
Yeah.
They jump in the air and kick their heels together.
A clickety click? I don't know.
Is there a name for it? Yeah, I think it's called an Irish kick heel. Or a jumping jack. A jumping jack.
Okay.
With a kick. Jumping jack kick. Or an Irish kick. Why are you looking at me like that? JG wakes up and looks up and says, good job, Skipper, you got it. And Captain Storm comes to and finds that he's the one gripping the gun. But he didn't do it. Where's that sailor? What happened?
So he limps below, but the blanket had loosened.
What?
I can see his face, and there's a smile on it. That wasn't there before.
No, it sure wasn't. And his eyes are closed. That wasn't there before.
No.
Maybe the angels rolled the stone away. And the angels rolled the stone away.
Walk down that road, heavy burden, heavy load.
Maybe Delarice came and sang in her mighty contralto voice.
Yeah. I will rise and I will walk with you.
Have you ever actually listened to Delarice's actual recordings, like way before Touch by an Angel?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. She's fantastic.
Well, I know. I have the Touch by an Angel soundtrack, don't I?
Oh, so do I, yes. And you know, she sure went through it back in the day. She was on tour with the Ed Sullivan Show.
Mm-hmm.
And she got done with the show and she went to the hotel restaurant and they wouldn't serve her because of her race.
Of course.
Well, you listen to this. Ed Sullivan marched right in there and he's with her.
Uh-huh.
And he said, she's going to be my dinner companion for the rest of our tour and she will be served. And if she's not, we're leaving your fucking hotel, hotel manager. He probably didn't curse, but.
No.
I would have.
Yeah.
So.
Good for him.
Ed Sullivan.
Ed Sullivan.
That's the end, we should say. I do love this story.
Yeah.
But I, like, sixth grade, fifth grade,
mm-hmm.
This is exactly the sort of literature I was reading, these kind of eerie supernatural stories where someone, like, has a conversation with one of their family members, and then they later find out that that was the moment the family member died. In another location. God. Or when it, what? You know exactly what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I know. Yes.
Well, that was a short story.
Wasn't it? Well, let's have another one.
Okay, how about another captain?
Captain Hunter.
He's not fighting in World War II.
Mm-mm, he's fighting in Vietnam.
Vietnam.
Did you know the Vietnam War went on for 20 years?
Yes, I sure did, because I actually did some research.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, this is the only DC comic, and maybe some short stories here and there, but this is the only comic regularly featuring stories from the Vietnam War. And again, we get one more issue of Vietnam War. Ooh. And then, because think about it, it's 1967, people are burning their draft cards.
Yeah.
People are protesting the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
So I imagine it wasn't very popular with the young readers and certainly not with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Captain Hunter is about to run into a TNT bunch in the Vietnam shocker, Blood Loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
This is Our Fighting Forces, number 105, featuring Captain Hunter.
We will do the first story.
Yes.
Is blood loyalty stronger than steel?
Yes.
Deeper than sea?
Uh-huh.
Longer than forever?
Sure.
For Captain Hunter, loyalty to his brother meant slogging through the terror of a land called Vietnam, looking for his twin who had been shot down somewhere over a nameless patch of jungle. But for Lu Lin, who was guiding him through the Kong-controlled region, a different yardstick had to be used for...
Blood loyalty. If you're new here, listener, Captain Hunter, this is a serialized story we've seen several installments of. Phil Hunter, Captain Phil Hunter, has a twin brother, Nick. Nick has been kidnapped by the Viet Cong, and as all twins do, they have a psychic connection. And so Nick has been calling out to his brother psychically to find him in the jungles of Vietnam and rescue him from captivity. And Lu Lin is the pretty, quote, oriental koopie doll, unquote, that's guiding Captain Hunter through the jungle to find his brother. And he always thinks that she's a double agent and that she's going to turn on him any second.
In spite of the fact that she keeps on proving herself to be loyal.
Yes. This art is also by Jack Abel. But see the different style? It's not quite as scratchy.
Not quite as scratchy, but there are a lot of contouring inking
lines. Yes.
Hey there, listener. Dr. Bob again. It is a very different art style, because it's a different artist. Hopefully you listened to my earlier instruction not to pay attention to anything I say. All right, on with the show.
How did it begin? Me getting into this dead end with screaming Kong knocking at the front door with hot steel? It was back there, Lu Lin guiding me through Kong territory. Me hoping against hope that I'd find my twin brother shot down over South Vietnam. And a ghostly face of his twin appears in the jungle growth.
Keep picking him up and laying him down, Phil. I'm here. You're moving toward me. Come, come.
Wait for me, Nick. I'll be there. I hear you, as only one identical twin can hear another. Nobody else can understand, but we do.
Suddenly I snapped out of my dream world.
He senses the Viet Cong around somewhere. Don't ask me how I know. Maybe it's a little voice inside telling me their eyes are boring into our backs. Wouldn't you know it? We should also mention that Lu Lin has traversed this entire jungle in
flats.
Not even stockings. All right, they are attacked by the Viet Cong from behind. They came swarming out of hiding like ants out of an anthill. He throws Lu Lin to the ground, starts firing. It's over fast, but he gets conked on the head with the butt of a rifle. He sees that Lu Lin has been captured. He sees that they are both smiling, and he assumes Lu Lin knew about the ambush, led him in there on purpose.
Right.
So he plays possum when he comes to, partly because he's still coming to, and also he's trying to pick up what they're talking about. Luckily, they're speaking English.
Well, he might speak Vietnamese.
He only just joined the Green Berets to save his brother. He was, like, not in the army before this, I don't think. That's how I remember it. It was, like, 8 years ago when we did the first story, but I'm sure it checks out. They assume that he is a scout from the Special Forces camp at Du Shao. He knows that his understrengthed position cannot hold off an attack, and he tried to find out our strength. He's doing recon. But this other guy doesn't think that he knows of their plans, which have no chance of failure. The one guy, the lead guy, goes off, tells him to guard the prisoner and call me when he regains consciousness. Meanwhile, I shall interrogate the charming Viet girl. She may have more information than she has already given us. Gulp.
Uh-oh. So he thinks so. Lu Lin has opened up, and this Kong unit is about to open up on an understrength special forces camp. Got to somehow warn him.
Actually, I said Oriental Koopie Doll. That doesn't appear in this issue for the first time in all of these stories.
That's right. He normally does use some degrading... degrading...
Language.
Derogatory.
Maybe he's objectional, learned objectified, something. Yes. Maybe he's learned something on the journey. Maybe it was the friends we made along the way. But apparently we see, as the reader, that Lu Lin hadn't been loose-lipped after all, and her head was a lot more than a hat rack for a sunbonnet. When the Charlie officer came into her tent, she gives him a swift karate chop on the neck, and she's going to escape. She comes up behind the guard, grabs his gun, gets Captain Hunter loose, but then this guard pushes him down from behind, and Lu Lin drops the gun. As he's pushing them down, he gives away the plan. Our officer was right. You two are scouts from the Special Forces camp at Du Shao. You work together, but you are doomed. Just as the Yankee fort is marked for destruction, now I interrogate.
He speaks like that, really? Interrogate?
I didn't say intellogate.
You said, well, but still, interrogate.
You know I'm working on all of my accents.
All right.
So he says, I recovered my balance, Charlie, and I dove for his rifle. I dove just a mite faster.
Yes, he grabs the rifle, more karate chopping, but
he
then...
He uses the rifle to knock the guy out.
Like a Yankee slugger.
And gives him a haymaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, sucker punch.
Yeah. So Captain Hunter and Lu Lin split the scene. Lu Lin says, if they catch us now, there would be no questioning, only swift execution.
Well, he just say, check, baby.
So they're going to make tracks for that special forces camp at Duxiao and warn him that Charlie and his regiment plan a visit, and it won't be a social call.
Well, we didn't have much of a head start, and the VCs made sure there'd be plenty of pressure on us.
Send Swiss scouts ahead. Perhaps we are fortunate enough to stop the cursed Green Beret and the girl before they warn of our attack. Alert our forces. We move out now.
Yeah, good luck, Charlie. Lu Lin knows every inch of this terrain, and she moves through the jungle like a cat, ducking Kong patrols, beating the bush for us, and they make it. They get to the fortification. They report to Lieutenant Ross, who's in command, and tell him that the Viet Cong officer kept talking about a sure thing, like maybe he knew something we didn't. Even when he's got the edge, Charlie won't tangle with a Green Beret outfit unless there's no chance to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, poor Lieutenant Ross. He looks like he's about 16. He's got a radio call into HQ for airborne reinforcements, but until they get here, I'm asking you to take command of the fort. This is no time for a rookie Louie to head up an outfit in a jam.
Huh.
Smart kid.
Yeah.
The helicopters arrive, but it turns out that the Viet Cong has surrounded the fort, mm-hmm. and they are going to town targeting these helicopters, which means that the fleet will have to set down miles away and hike in, and they will never get there in time.
Mm.
Captain Hunter says they'll have to hold out alone, and just then a door in one of the guard towers opens, and what does Lu Lin see?
Her brother.
Her brother, who left home years ago. What is he doing here? All right. Lu Lin is ordered to cover because the mortar fire is starting outside the parapets.
Okay.
And off she goes into the north blockhouse where she saw her brother.
Right.
Just as she's approaching, the soldiers inside the north blockhouse are evacuating. And she says, who gave this insane order? Not Captain Hunter, surely.
Mm-mm.
In she goes, and who does she see? Keo, mm-hmm. her brother.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had gone away to join the Kong.
So he says, so I have, little sister. This is my way of fighting, joining the Yankee Special Forces, undergoing training, and worming in an assignment here. Now my moment of glory comes. When the Kong attacks this sector and no one is here to defend the position, be clever, little sister. Don't give me away, and I shall see it that no harm befalls you.
I don't think he knows very much about Lu Lin.
Mm-mm.
The Kong comes shrieking in at the undermanned Special Forces camp. They cut through the outer perimeter of barbed wire and slash in toward the walls. Captain Hunter orders everyone back to secondary positions.
Mm-hmm.
They still got plenty of ammo to hit them with before they get through.
But, he says, he saw one weapon was quiet. A beret who taught it to speak was now silent himself, meaning the guy died behind the gun.
Yeah.
So he grabs the weapon, which is a...
Bazooka?
Bazooka, I guess. It shoots... I don't know. I picked up the mortar, loaded and leveled, and slugged home a message to the charging VCs. It's not a rocket launcher, but it's a massive gun.
A powerful weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
This issue, I took note, is very graphic in its depiction of death.
Yeah.
Like these Viet Cong soldiers in silhouette have clearly been blown to bits.
To bits, yes.
They look like a Negative Man.
Yes.
Apparition.
Like their silhouettes are... clearly being ripped away.
Lots of Kirby crackle around their limp bodies.
Mm-hmm. You can see through their limbs.
Yes.
In some areas.
All of a sudden, Charlie pulls back. It wasn't like the VC to pull a stunt like that, because we didn't hit him that hard. Looks like they didn't give the old college try on purpose. They're sliding off to a no point of attack. Who's in the North Blockhouse?
So neither Ross nor
Hunter
knew that there wasn't any squad in that North Blockhouse.
So it's just Lu Lin and her brother. He sees the Viet Cong approaching. All I have to do is withhold fire. They come around the blockhouse, up over the walls, into the fort, and it's all over.
She pulls a gun on her brother. She says, "Drop the gun, dear brother. Only the ties of our blood prevents me from turning in such a tremendous dog. This spot will be defended."
"Fool, I offer you safety and you choose death. I disown you. You are no longer a sister to me." Fine with her, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The firepower in the North Blockhouse turned out to be in the sure hands of a girl named Lu Lin. She grabs the gun and starts firing at the Viet Cong.
Mm-hmm.
Keo says, "You are signing a death warrant for us both. The Cong will overrun this fort. They have too many plans. They will blame me for this failure." And she says, "Shut your trap, brother. If we are to die, let us face our ancestors with a clear conscience, as people of honor, not whining dogs." So Captain Hunter sees the Viet Cong scattering before the fire coming from the North Blockhouse, and then he remembered something that Lu Lin said she'd be at the strong point. "I've got to make sure she's in one piece. Right. I can't afford to lose my one and only guide." What does he find? She's in the blockhouse with her hands on a hot gun.
Yeah.
And her brother's sulking over in the corner. And she discloses that it is her brother, and he is masquerading as a special forces trooper. Small world, huh?
All of a sudden, it got quiet. The hours dragged. Night fell. What had been a battlefield of screaming Cong now looked more like a cemetery of only ghostly tombstones. So we sent up a few flares to see if anybody was stirring. Even a mouse.
Then he gets the bright idea to go interrogate Keo, who says the Viet Cong had an alternate plan ready a long time ago. They are building a tunnel from their positions right to the blockhouse. They'll come up from under the floor. I was to let them in, and they take over the fort. Well, maybe we can make that tunnel work two ways, Captain Hunter says. All right. So, they strip the walls of all but a skeleton crew and the remnants of the Green Beret Force assembles outside the blockhouse. They are going to go into the tunnel themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first, a Viet Cong soldier comes up and they knock him out.
Knock him out. Pull him out.
Drop in. They're going to go through the tunnel and surprise the Viet Cong.
Right.
Keo's in the lead because they're going to recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to tell the Viet Cong that he needs to get out first, and then they may attack. So he does that.
Right.
But right behind him is Captain Hunter, who gives a mighty slap across the face to the first Viet Cong soldier he sees. And they get to the end of the tunnel, pop out, and start punching and shooting. The small band of Green Berets chops Charlie to ribbons. The Viet Cong soldiers are running around in circles. They don't know what to do.
They're pushing them toward the fort. They're pushing the Viet Cong toward the fort.
Yes, toward the fort where they can be mowed down by the Green Berets.
Yeah.
And again, a very gory depiction of gunfire and death. Aren't comics fun?
They are. This is nice. Actually, it's kind of fun.
Then he sees the Viet Cong officer. Captain Hunter sees the Viet Cong officer who had previously captured him. He goes for a tackle, and the Viet Cong officer pulls out a grenade.
Yeah.
Hunter grabs around the grenade to push the pin in so that it won't go off.
Right.
The Viet Cong soldier rips his hand free. The grenade bounces away. The handle pops off. The Viet Cong officer assumes they're going to die together.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, Captain Hunter manages to pull away and maneuver the Viet Cong soldier so that he rolls on top of his own grenade and explodes in Kirby crackle.
Wow.
Right?
Right. Pieces of him flying in the air.
Yes. By dawn, it's all over. The leaderless Kong regiment had faded away to regroup. The fort was okay, and now Keo must be punished, says Lu Lin. Mm-hmm. And yet, he is my brother. No matter what he has done, I shall always feel toward him a blood loyalty. Captain Hunter understands. If anyone rates a favor, you do. So I recommend as his punishment, we turn him loose. Let him try to explain what happened to the Viet Cong. They'll figure out what to do with him.
He's gonna be
killed. Yeah. Duh. Lieutenant Ross accepts the return of command and hopes he can live up to the responsibility the way Captain Hunter did.
Jesus, you'll make out, Ross. Sorry, I can't stay. Gotta push on.
Do you think he'll ever find his brother, Lieutenant Ross? Isn't it like hunting for a raindrop in a cloudburst?
Maybe. And yet, if Nick Hunter is alive, his brother will find him. Men like Captain Phil Hunter cannot be stopped.
You're getting closer, twin. Still a long road, but you're closer. Closer. Do you read me?
I read you, Nick. Every time I put one foot in front of the other, I'm that much nearer. Hang on, boy. I'll be there. Just hang on.
Now, what if Nick's already dead? We've learned from the previous story that in war, the dead could speak to the living.
Well, then his brother will retrieve his body.
I guess so.
Yeah, that's important, too.
I'll say, well, Dr. Husband.
Yes?
I don't want you to miss Captain Hunter's explosive search in the next issue of Our Fighting Forces.
And it's his last search.
It is, but there's a twist.
Okay.
I'm not going to give you any spoilers.
Don't.
Because you won't remember in 2 years when we get around to the next issue. Unless you want to just jump ahead to the next issue next week.
We'll see.
Okay.
All right.
We'll talk about it. In Ireland, you can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can find us on our sister podcast, Nerd Orchestra, and you can check out Nerd Orchestra on Instagram at @nerd_orchestra. And you can find us right back here next week with Captain Hunter or not. I don't know. We'll decide on the plane.
We will.
Bye.
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us sailing.
Keep us sailing along.
High in the sky, there's no curtain.
Yes, we'll have fun. So everyone, come on.
Guide us.
When you're beside me, we can fly.